Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Friday, December 17th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning with myself and my co-host, Chris Drew. Before we get started, go follow Chris on Twitter. Chris, what's your handle?
It's Christopher.Drew, and that's Chris with a K, K-R-I-S-T-O-P-H-E-R. I'm going to start dropping some little video nuggets here and there, but obviously I don't want to take anything away from the Menace of Sports page, which we've got into, and the intern who's been incredible and fielded plenty of insults, and he takes it like a champ.
Well, my Twitter has certainly been a volatile mm-hmm. place.
It's been a war zone.
Anytime anything, I mean, if Urban's in the news, my Twitter's going to explode, and I want to clarify my one tweet once again, just because I think people are just they're either I don't word it correctly, or they're absolutely idiots, and it's probably a combo of the both, or maybe I just am an idiot. I don't know. But before we get started, Spaces today, Twitter Spaces, 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Come hang out. We're going to talk whatever. We'll talk about Urban Meyer. We'll talk about NIL, the bowl games. It doesn't matter. Whatever you want to talk about, we'll be on there 3 to 4 on Twitter. So make sure you look out for that. If you go to Menace to Sports on Twitter, click the bell, the notification. So then if we go live, it'll just alert you. Like, in case you want to jump in the spaces, you're right there. It's alerted. And you can come hang out. Other than that, we'll skip the rest of the housekeeping. But I want to talk about this first. First, I want to talk about my tweet that I put out about the kicker. Because it's not as simple, at least my opinion of it, my analysis of the situation is it's not as simple as everyone makes it out to be. Everyone makes it out to be like, oh, kind of like they do me, like, you're a wife beater. It's like, time out. No, I'm not, but okay. That's easy to just say that. It's like Urban abuses players. Like, stop it. No, he doesn't. Should he have kicked the kicker? Of course not, right? Of course that was wildly inappropriate and I guess old school, like back in the day, players got their helmet slapped or grabbed by the face mask when they're coached hard. And that was not okay back then, but it was widely accepted. And nowadays that is completely, I mean, that's fireable. So should he have kicked the kid? No. It's a man. He has a wife. He made $13 million in the NFL. Like it's a grown up. Should he have kicked him? No. But this pussy in the interview, I have never, I mean, that's supposed to be a man. He's talking about, he kicked me in the leg the one that I was out all year last year. And I looked at him and I said, do not kick me again. And I was like, whoa, you talk about blown out of proportion. I promise you. And I've already talked about it. So I'm going to not try to beat a dead horse, but Urban's done this a dozen times where he'll hit a guy, like punch a guy in the shoulder, but it's like, he's not trying to harm anyone. It's not in an abusive fashion. He literally is just trying to razz him a little bit, and especially kickers, tries to get under their skin. So was it wrong? Yes, it was wrong to kick the guy. It was. But to sit here and blow this up, and this guy's going to do interviews, is such one, he's such a pussy, such a coward. Like, mm-hmm. just get out of the interview. You're only doing this for attention because I guess he was the third most accurate kicker in NFL history, but his career's over. And so clearly he's trying to grasp at something just absurd, ridiculous. And that's all I was trying to say. I was not trying to say that it should be allowed to kick a player. No. That, I never said he should be allowed. I said, Christ, don't make this a big deal. It wasn't a big deal. He didn't hurt you. Good God.
Yeah, dude, it's so bad. Like, you're going to look up puss boy in the dictionary and that's going to be what it is. First of all, he plays a full contact sport. He got kicked by a 60-some-year-old man one time and is acting like it's the end of the world. He's on his way to some C-list acting or modeling career. I mean, this was incredibly lame. And it's like, dog, I mean, I had high school coaches. All of them would probably be fired. I mean, shit, yeah. Zach, we had a baseball coach, and if he saw us get out of the way of a pitch during batting practice, like that was going to hit us, he would get on the mound and throw at us until we let one hit us.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So like, it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah. I mean, that's, and just to be clear, like that's ridiculous. Like that, there's no place for that in sports, but I mean,
It's a grown ass man doing this stupid interview, and it's like, goodness gracious.
And Urban Meyer is a villain in the media. A lot of it brought on by himself. Everything else that was reported, absolutely accurate. Like the shit he was saying to his coaches, absolutely accurate. Like Bowling Green was the best staff he ever had, absolutely accurate. But I don't want to keep rehashing all that because we've talked about it now twice. Yeah. So I don't want to keep continuing, or else we'll turn into ESPN and just regurgitate the same thing over and over again. But what I do want to talk about is, isn't it convenient, right, that ESPN has this witch hunt for Urban Meyer right now, when 3 days ago, Dan Snyder, the news came out that he tried to obstruct the investigation into the alleged sexual misconduct. But no, we can't talk about that, because Urban's the worst person on the planet because he kicked a kicker who's an NFL player in a combat sport, right, Chris? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're sitting here like, wait a minute, didn't we already do this with John Gruden? Yeah. Every time something comes up about Dan Snyder, some coach gets fired. It's like, at what point are we going to say, okay, this happened to Urban, but in breaking news, like, right? The Urban Meyer story should have been the B story. The A story should be Dan Snyder. Not only have we not seen a single email from this guy, we haven't seen anything released other than John Gruden making some racist and bad statements. We haven't seen anything been released. Nothing came of it. There's multiple girls like vehemently shouting and screaming that this stuff went on, and they found no evidence. They're just going to move forward like nothing happened. And then we find out that there's proof that he was sending people in his camp to these witnesses to get to them before the investigators, to intimidate them and make sure they did not speak about him, did not disclose what happened. And no one is talking about it because Urban kicked a kicker in the hamstring kind of hard. Like, are we so blind that this is going on? And this is, the media is turning into more and more like politics every single day, where politics, there will be a huge Senate hearing about some corruption, and that morning they'll launch some huge COVID press conference, and you're like, there's all this smoke and mirrors to distract the public from what is actually going on. And what is actually going on is Dan Snyder's a piece of shit, and he has done a bunch of fucked up stuff. And because he's a billionaire and an owner of an NFL team, they're trying to divert everyone's attention away from it. It's amazing.
And they're succeeding. That's the worst part. Like, they're succeeding. Whenever something happens to Urban Meyer, people it's all this outrage, this and that. You know, people come and fucking attack you whenever Urban Meyer does something wrong. But like, people come out of the woodworks to just like light Urban Meyer up after watching ESPN. It's like, wait a second. Like, you want to talk about a really like, you know, shitty situation where someone's doing really evil things? It's Dan Snyder, and yeah, he's a billionaire, and he's not just the coach of a team, he's the owner of a fucking team. And yet, like you said, it's not talked about because Urban Meyer kicked the kicker.
There's no doubt. And it's, I think part of my problem is, and I've done a good job after I got fired, I had to just ignore Twitter trolls and stay off of Twitter and just kind of tweet if I wanted to tweet and not really interact with people. But as the show has grown, I read more and more responses and comments, and the trolls are out full force when anything happens. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that happened is I guess Pitt fans finally found my tweet where I said Joel Maddison wouldn't start at Ohio State or Alabama. So now the last thing I'm going to say, we can move on. It's hilarious when some fucking 43-year-old fat Pitt fan with a Hail to Pitt shirt on in his profile picture, you could tell played offensive guard at like Polka High School in West Virginia, is going to tell me like, do you even watch the games? Have you even watched him? And I want to respond like, are you even qualified to evaluate him? Like, what are you going to tell me, that he made a great catch one time and you cheered and spilled your beer? Like, stop it. I have not watched every game of Pitt. I've watched probably 8 of their games, and I wasn't studying him. I was studying Kenny Pickett
probably. Mm-hmm.
And obviously by doing so, I watched the kid play a lot, and he's a really good player. I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but he 100% factually would not be in the top 3 receivers at Ohio State, and he would be the 3rd best receiver at Alabama. So that's just what it is. That's real. That's real evaluation and analysis. So these Pitt fans can talk about Jordan Addison and how, you would have said the same thing about Aaron Donald too. No, you don't fucking know that. I never watched him in college, but I promise you, if I watched Aaron Donald, I would have been able to see that he was a monster, right? Jordan Addison will not be as good a pro as Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, or Jameson Williams. He will not. Jackson Smith and Jigba, the jury's still out, but Jordan Addison wouldn't play in the slot anyways like that. So it's just an absurd argument.
No, we had some great Twitter responses on that. The Pitt fans came out of freaking left field. We had some arguments. Someone said that Menace to Sports sounds like a go-kart. That was awesome. I don't know what the fuck that even means.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, people, all kinds, Pitt people, they're great with their GIFs. Their GIFs were fantastic. You got a couple Yodas in there calling you dumb.
Can we call them GIFs like we're supposed to?
Oh, yeah. GIFs? What? Okay. Fire me.
Oh, all right. Let's move on. I just had to get my kind of Twitter responses on air because I'm much better in long form where I can just explain with words than when I have a character limit and all that other stuff. Plus, I'm just over Twitter.
The best was people changing the definition of starters.
That was Buckeye fans though.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was really awesome.
And someone tried to argue that Jameson Williams was never a starter at Ohio State because he only had 300 yards. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh man. Okay. I don't know what starter means anymore then.
Yeah, but I said, buddy, whoever starts the game is a starter. He's like, now you're making up definitions. It's like, all right, we can't.
What is the definition of a starter? This is my problem. I try to rationalize and argue with these points, and it's like, what? I coached for 15 years. The starter is the guy you put on the field the first play, and it means something, taking that first snap. And Jameson definitely was a starter. So anyways, moving on. My guy, St. Louis' finest, Cam Brown, is returning for his senior year, as he should. I've said it pretty much all year. I think he was a second round draft pick right now. And I think if he returns for a year with new blood in the defensive coaching staff, he has a chance to become one of those day one guys, one of those first round guys. And that's huge. I think it's not only is it huge for him and his journey and now his chance to kind of double down and increase his stock for the next draft class, but also one to go out a different way, right?
Right.
In what will be the 2022 Buckeyes. And also, it's big for the bowl game because if he was going to go, I don't believe he plays in this bowl game. Now, Ohio State's had a number of people come out and say they're playing. Most of them kind of scratch my head like, why wouldn't they play? Like, yeah. They need more film. They need to make some more plays to increase their stock. The only two, in my opinion, that don't need to play are Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, and they haven't said a damn thing about if they're playing or not. So, those have been the only two question marks. I don't see anyone else that is even up for conversation to not play. Only one I can see is Jeremy Ruckert because he's like, for fucking what? Like, you're not going to throw me the ball. I've blocked 800 snaps. I'm good.
No, you're right. Cam Brown coming back is big for the bowl game, and it's going to be big for next year. Obviously, like being a lockdown corner on what should be a really improved defense next year will help his draft stock a ton. I mean, we saw when Halfley came in, Arnett and Okuda were both, very, very high draft picks. And I think Cam Brown has a chance to be an absolute day one guy because I expect the defense to be a lot better. And if he's healthy for a full year, that'll be absolutely huge for him. Additionally, like him at the combine, he's going to shock some people because he's fast as shit, Zach. Like, you know it. Like, that kid can fly, and so he's going to be a combine warrior when it's his time. But I'm super happy for him coming back for one more year. Obviously, I'm sure that the taste in his mouth from the Michigan game, as the one person on the field that showed emotion that they didn't want to lose that game, I think that's big from coming back. And I mean, he's a dog, he's a player, and senior leadership to me is a really important part of championship culture. And I think him coming back is absolutely positive.
It's a huge piece, and it's a huge piece because, like, you're looking at a defense now. The linebacker core is still going to be a major, major point of emphasis. I have more confidence now because there's going to be Jim Knowles kind of running the show and developing and teaching them than I did. But that's a huge piece right there. I mean, you're talking about now they have Cameron Brown and Denzel Burke, both starting corners are back, right? And there's talks that Seven Banks could come back. I'm indifferent whether he does or doesn't, because then you're going to have those young guys, Ja'Kalen Johnson, Jordan Hancock. I'm not a big legend.
Tomasos, dude.
Cavazos, I'm not gonna say fan. I'm a fan. I want him to be successful. I'm just not as high on him as maybe some other people. But I think they got some young talent that can supplement those two, in my opinion, first round corners at the end of the day. Like, Denzel's not yet, but I think in 2 years he's a first round corner. I think Cameron Brown, with 1 year of development, if he's coached hard and coached well, is a first round corner. And then if you can get Josh Proctor back, right? And then you have the Ronnie Hickman, Lathan Ransom, Cam Martin. You have all those guys in the mix with a year of improvement. That back five
and
is,
a gangster calling the shots.
Yeah, is legit. Legit. Yeah. Now the D line is going to be really good. Jack Sawyer, JTT. I mean, the interior guys, Teron Vincent, Ty Hamilton, Tylenol Williams. I mean, I think this defense has a chance to be very good. And I don't know if EA is able to have another year. I think everyone can because of COVID. And so I would imagine he would need to come back. Then you add in Steel Chambers. And if Cody Simon can improve, that is three solid linebackers. And then you throw in a young guy like CJ Hicks or Gabe Powers or Sonny Styles or whoever. The defense personnel-wise, it's something to be excited about because now they have a little experience and they got a new sheriff in town. So I think there's something to be really fired up about that. And Cam Brown, I think, is a huge piece to that defense with him announcing he's coming back.
And just as a team as well, I mean, this as a team as a whole, you have to think that CJ Stroud's second year is going to be kind of trending upwards, you would hope. And so this team has a chance to be really, really special next year. And I'm happy Cam Brown and Ronnie Hickman are both coming back. I mean, that's incredible for the back. I mean,
hold on, Chris. Ronnie Hickman's not coming back. I can't stand that shit. He announced he's coming back. It's coming back from fucking what? Where was Ronnie Hickman going? You mean the portal, I hope, is what he was talking about. Coming back from the NFL? He's not an NFL football player.
Not yet. Yeah. You're right.
I mean, when kids do that, it's like Chris Leak did that after 2005, and everyone, we were in Florida, we're like, what? Coming back from where? You're not good enough to play in the NFL right now. Like, would be a seventh rounder, sixth rounder. Like, what? Where are you coming back from?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think Ronnie would probably go somewhere in that fifth round range, but it was really a no brainer. I mean, he had to come back.
That's a stretch. Fifth
you
round.
Think
is
so?
A, I guess fifth he, round is a stretch.
He's a tweener guy. Yeah.
Did he make plays?
I mean, didn't he lead the team in tackles?
Yeah, he's a good tackler, but what position? I mean, was he going to be like a box safety?
I don't know what position he plays. I mean, it is kind of a box safety role. He's a tweener. Had him there at the bullet or linebacker or whatever you want to call it. Played some safety. I don't know. I think he's a player. I'm glad he's back.
I think he has ability, but when people say stuff like that, it's like he's coming back. It's like, what is he coming back from? I'm confused what that means. Like, he's a safety that. I mean, he made a bunch of big tackles. He had two interceptions. He wasn't, you know, very highly graded on PFF. It's just like, okay, he's a guy that's going to forego eligibility to leave early. The only time you should do that is if you're a top two round pick, and he is not. So anyways, not to go on a tangent, but that's one of my biggest pet peeves when receiver said, or a receiver, when I had a receiver, it'd be like, hey, I've decided to come back. I'm like, come back from what? Like, come back from home after the bowl game? Like, what are you talking about? You've decided to come back. Like,
I do want to talk about guys leaving earlier, guys that surprised you. Because with Cam Brown coming back, I mean, obviously, like, you were watching the coaches' room. Were there any ever guys that, like, shocked you with the decision to leave or stay?
I take that back. There's certain ones, yes. But I knew the reasoning behind at least my players. Like, Jalen Marshall should have 100% come back.
That was the one that shocked me.
Well, he was having a child, so he needed to go to the NFL to, you know, it was a big, big drama, big, long story. But that's why he left. He was having a child, and he wanted to go, you know, start a professional career, start making money, and he was going to have a kid. That was one that kind of surprised me. Noah Brown Curtis Samuel didn't surprise me, though he could have used another year of receiver coaching because I only really had him for a year. It didn't surprise me. He was so dynamic that I saw that coming. Noah Brown didn't surprise me in the least bit because of how dysfunctional the offense was. He needed another year of highlights, right? For what he did in the Oklahoma game, that could have been a week in, week out deal. And it would have helped his draft stock immensely if he did, but he didn't have confidence that he would even get that chance, and Urban didn't like him. Or you talk about, now, he never physically touched Noah because Noah beat his ass, but but Urban just, I mean, the way he handled Noah Brown was because Noah Brown, they thought that Noah Brown smoked weed on the bowl trip. And it's like, first of all, geez, it's weed. Like, my God, are we going to make a big deal out of weed? But Urban did. He thought weed was like fucking meth or heroin. He really did, because he didn't understand it. Right. And so anyways, that didn't surprise me. I think there's some that surprised me, like Tyvis Powell leaving early. It's like, what? Like,
yeah, he left early, and I think he went undrafted.
Yeah. And then and there's always, those are always the ones that make you scratch your head. Like, what, you left early, but like, who told you were going to, that it was going to be a smart business decision, right? Mm-hmm. Like Mike, what shocked me, I think, the most in my career was when Michael Thomas and I went to dinner after the Fiesta Bowl, and he told me he was thinking about coming back, because I was like, coming back? Like, and I was for it. I was like, hey, if that's what you want to do, we'll put together a badass plan of development and a way to kind of expand your role in the offense, get you in the slot some. Like, you know, I'm like,
yeah,
hell yeah, full on recruiting mode. Like, yeah, well, hell, if you're going to come back, let's make this worth it. Because he said, you know, I came here and I've had some goals that I want to achieve, right? And Blitnikoff's All-Americans, he won a tree in Buckeye Grove, which he doesn't have any of that. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that, when it came down to it, basically why all these kids left, why Mike left, a big part why Jalen left, a big part why the almost main reason Noah and Curtis left was because JT was the quarterback and couldn't throw it very well, and Ed Warner was the coordinator.
Yeah.
And they all were like, nah, I'm out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and we saw kind of the reverse effect of that a couple years later, when Haskins was you know, going to be the quarterback. You know, Dixon came back, Paris Campbell came back. Everyone wanted to continue. They did the whole run it back thing, but obviously those guys weren't going to be super high draft picks at that point anyway. I got a text message about the staff changes. Like, there was, you know, some momentum with staff, you know, wondering about Knowles, wondering about this, wondering about that. Are you surprised that we haven't heard anything about staff changes in the last, you know, since the Knowles thing?
No, because it's how Ryan operates, right? Mm-hmm. He told the guys that are not going to return that they had until after the bowl game to find another job, and he wasn't going to fire them on the spot, that they've done, you know, he's not upset with their coaching. He just has to go a different direction. And so they're going to continue coaching through the bowl game. I think you're going to see a full overhaul on defense. And I think one will shock you. I think Larry stays. I don't think Larry's retiring after kind of feeling out his situation and his family and everything. But I think I think there's a chance Matt Barnes remains on staff. I think that Kerry and Al have a good chance of not returning here. And then I think Greg Sadrawa is the other one that might be out the door. If I had to put money on it and guess, it would be those three guys don't return. So I'm not surprised I haven't heard anything. I mean, I haven't tried to hear anything. I haven't reached out to anyone to find out, but because the one thing I will never be is like a breaking news guy. I don't really care.
Yeah.
When it comes out, I'll give you my opinion on it. Unless it's something I really feel like needs to be broken, but that's what I think will happen. I think those three guys will be out the door. And then I think, then we start talking about corner coaches and, who's going to come from Oklahoma State, who Jim Knowles is going to bring in. And then, you know, I've said for two years that Justin Fry will be the O-line coach here. So when that happens, it'll be like, Zach Smith's been saying this for 2 years. Like, it's going to happen. Unless Chip Kelly gives Fry like a boatload of money.
Yeah. And
I still think he goes, though, because just you can't turn this opportunity down from UCLA to Ohio State career-wise. It's just, even if he's not the coordinator, you got to do it.
And every Ohio State fan should absolutely want Fry, like, just point blank, period. Every single one of them should want Fry. I mean, he's that good. I mean, hearing what I've heard from you and from other people, I mean, that's the one. I did notice that things kind of got quiet right around, you know, signing day with the coaching stuff, because everything was about NIL and about this and that. I do think it's interesting. I do think NIL will stop a lot of kids from leaving early. I think you'll have more kids staying a little bit longer to get developed because they are able to make some money in college. Now, Mike Gundy, Oklahoma State, took a shot at Ryan Day. Like, for the other day, you know, making a reference to the joke about, you know, being born on third base. What do you think, Zach? Why are these coaches feel so comfortable taking shots at Ryan Day?
You know, I think it's just it's a lot like, why is Urban Meyer the villain? Ohio State is just the national villain. When Buckeye Nation says Ohio against the world, that's 100% accurate. Like, when I was at Florida, no, there was a bullseye on our back to like win the game against us because we'd won a national championship, maybe, but there was not this utter hatred across the country or in the media of Florida, of the Florida Gators, of Urban Meyer. I mean, there was literally back then, there was like one guy for the Orlando Sentinel that didn't like Urban, and it was a huge deal. Like, they got into it all the time, but everyone else pretty much were like, they treated him like Nick Saban. It was like, this guy's the like ridiculous Hall of Famer. And it's wild how different the hatred is for Ohio State. And I think it's the how cocky the fan base is, the longevity of success all the way back to Woody Hayes, how passionate the fans are, how widespread they are. Because if I'm an Oklahoma State fan, I have to hear about Ohio State, even in freaking Norman, Oklahoma. No, that's not where they are, but Stillwater, Oklahoma. I got to hear about Ohio State because I promise you there's some Buckeye grads there. There's people that fly a scarlet and gray O flag.
A little OSU.
Right. And so there's just this jealousy of Ohio State, especially by that second or third tier program like the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Plus, they just boss moved, like stole his chick, right? Like Ryan Day just went in and said, damn, your wife's bad. She's mine now. And Jim Knowles was like, hey, this is way more attractive than you, Gundy. And so he dipped. So there's definitely going to be some bad feelings there. And you saw that when Mike Gundy said, hey, he's not going to coach our bowl game. Because he's pissed, right? The guy's not going to run he's not going to run his own defense in the bowl game before he leaves for Ohio State because Mike Gundy has his feelings hurt. His wife cheated on him and left, and it's a problem, right? Yeah. So that's all I think it is. But if I'm Ryan, I feel disrespected as shit, and I'm taking notes now. Absolutely. If he ever plays Oklahoma State, that was a disastrous year for the Buckeyes. But
I'm taking notes. Or a super overachieved year for Oklahoma State, Zach. Let's calm down.
Oh, but I'm going to tell you right now. The other thing I'm doing if I'm Ryan Day. Anytime I need a recruit, like let's say we lose out on two receivers, I need to go find that fourth receiver. The first fucking commitment list I'm pulling up is Oklahoma State, and I'm trying to poach the shit out of his roster. I'm trying to find the transfer portal. I'm trying to poach a great player from Oklahoma State. Like he just created if I'm Ryan, he just created a war that he didn't want because I'm just going to go out of my way when a situation comes up where I can, you know, stick a knife in Oklahoma State. I'm doing it.
And it's also funny because, you know, remember Ryan Day took Mike Yurcich from Gundy and then basically told him after 1 year, yeah, you gotta hit the road.
Right, right. So, he stole his guy. And when he got him, he was like, this guy sucks.
Disrespected him. Like someone steals your girl and then says, nah, you're terrible. You're like, terrible.
Damn, she sucks in bed. She's out. She got to go.
It's also funny for Gundy to kind of be taking shots at Day and Knowles for taking a better job. Because I don't know if you saw, but not too long ago, Mike Gundy put the feelers out to try to get the Florida job, Zach.
Well, there's no doubt. You know, it's all hypocrisy in college, college coaching, college football, and really athletics. It's all hypocrisy. It's like, you know,
like he had his agent, touch base with the search party for Florida saying, despite what's, you know, being said, basically, I will leave my alma mater. I'm ready to compete for national titles. I am absolutely interested in Florida. Thank you for, reading this or whatever. Like that's from Gundy's agent. So it's like, yo, you can't get mad at Knowles for looking at better opportunities when Gundy was doing that, too.
Well, yeah, the difference is Knowles got it. Gundy didn't, right?
Yeah.
Gundy got turned down. Knowles got his step up in promotion. And so Gundy, like I said, it's all jealousy. That's all it is. It's jealousy, and he's vindictive now.
Mm-hmm. So I guess Gundy turned down Arkansas, Florida State, and Tennessee twice while trying to get to Florida, and Florida, you know, didn't want him. The mullet, I guess, doesn't fly down there. No. I just think it's interesting for them. And it's also interesting that, you know, coaches are leaving the Big 12 at that rate. Okay, bowl practices, Zach. Is this kind of the time for young guys that, like, where freshmen are kind of like sophomores now? They kind of turn the corner and you get to see it on. Do you get, like, a good glimpse of kind of what the next year is going to look like for the young guys at bowl practice?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what people don't – I guess it doesn't happen very often, but what happened to us in 2012 was complete robbery because we had a bowl ban, a postseason ban. And so not only did we not get to play in the Big Ten championship game, which was an extra week of practice, we also didn't get a bowl game. And bowl prep is kind of twofold, right? One fold is you're trying to kind of keep your guys that are your veterans, your guys that played all year, your starters and contributing backups. You're trying to keep them sharp so that they're still at their best for the game. But you have 15 practices now, and a lot of that time is spent developing young guys. It's like the pre-spring spring ball. And so there's the amount of reps. I mean, you figure in 15 practices, you know, let's say Emeka Egbuka, if he's fully healthy, gets 15 practices in, he's easily getting 300 reps, quality game reps in that time. That's 300 quality game reps that he would not get if there wasn't a bowl game, and which happened to us in 2012. So that's part. So that's the one thing. Bowl practice is huge for development because you get all that stuff on tape. That gives them even more cut-ups to watch all winter and work on one-on-one stuff. And then going into spring now, they got an extra 300 reps, game reps, that they wouldn't otherwise have. So that's the point of bowl practice, is stay sharp, go win a bowl game, right? Keep your veterans and guys that play sharp. But then almost every practice, they'll take an extra 30 minutes at the end of practice and probably do a young guy's scrimmage, right? Like guys that don't play scrimmage, basically, to let them go play game reps against other guys and see who can make a couple plays and maybe like catch some momentum going into the winter. It's huge.
Quote-unquote flash. That's big. Is there ever one play that really stood out to you in bowl prep that kind of was like, oh, shit, like for next year, they're ready, that made a jump?
I think I told you the other show, it wasn't necessarily bowl prep, but we saw it all bowl prep was Corey Smith and Michael Thomas in 2013. Mm-hmm. I mean, we went down to Miami and they were just fucking up our defense on scout team. And just absolutely torching our defense. And so one, it made you really terrified to go play Sammy Watkins and fucking the crew that Clemson had. But two, you saw like, oh shit, 2014, these receivers are about to be fucking real. Yeah. And they were right. You fast forward a year, and that bowl prep, that those practices, I'll never forget it. I mean, palm trees, it's freaking 80 degrees. And I can visualize Michael Thomas just looked like a freak of nature. Just the way he was going up and catching the ball against our defense. And it was fun to watch. And it definitely got you excited and got him excited. Hell yeah. The minute that bowl game's over, they had this sense of like, I've been killing it in bowl practice. And now all these kids are leaving. It's my time, right? And you see a whole transition of the personality of an athlete when that happens. And I saw it with him specifically for sure.
It's like the moment where you realize the work works, and then kind of next year is a big year, obviously, and the rest is history. But Zach, mm-hmm. That's all I got for today. We're going to release a recruiting episode at some point. We're gonna dig into it. We've been kind of going back and forth for some time, kind of making sure we bring you the most quality stuff on this network. So, Zach, you got anything else?
No, that's it. That's it. We'll let you know our plans for next week. It is Christmas week. We will definitely mm-hmm. still be doing a morning show.
Yep.
But this the main show is going to, at some point after bowl games, it's going to transition back to once a week in the off season, and then as we get closer to season, we'll ramp it back up to two. And who knows how big this grows? We may say no. We need to do two. I need to do two main shows. So we'll see. But the plan right now is keep this twice a week going with the main show, daily morning shows through the end of bowl season, and then after the national championship. We might tweak it a little bit, but we also might not, because the way this momentum's going, we don't want to lose it or kill it. We want to keep rolling. So appreciate everybody for listening. Menace out.
Menace out.